strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, give you a little programming note. We are awaiting the arrival of President Biden. As soon as he takes the podium for his press conference, we are going to that live. But right now joining us is Doug Franz from the Doug and Wolf Show. We talked just the other day about the four-game sweep, Chris Paul, and the legendary play. And now he's tested positive for COVID-19. How quickly your attitude can change in sports.
James Harden still can't run. Kawhi Leonard, the Clippers are fearing that he has a torn ACL. And CP3 is out indefinitely. I mean, this NBA season is all about attrition. And right now, the Suns... they could lose anybody but two guys, and one of them was Chris Paul, and right now he's out.
Any idea? I know it's all speculation because we don't have a lot of information. Minimum amount of time gone with a positive test, maximum amount of time gone. Is there any idea?
It's an impossible question to answer because you have to answer the question with a question. Is he symptomatic or asymptomatic? If he is symptomatic... then he's in a 10-day quarantine, and he only comes out of that after 10 days, and he only comes out of that with two negative tests. We don't have any idea when that would be. If it's 10 days from now, then he would miss either two or three games of the Western Conference Finals. We don't even know how many games he'll miss because we don't know how long the series that's active will go. If Clippers-Jazz goes six games, then you have a chance of CP3 missing three of the games of the next series. However, if he's asymptomatic, this is not that big of a story. All he has to do is test negative twice in a row with 24 hours in between tests. And if he does that, then it's fine. The problem is, I have to answer your question with a question. Is he symptomatic or asymptomatic? I don't know.
The Suns in the past have not been very vocal or giving much information about anybody that's in the protocol for a lot of reasons. HIPAA laws, but also just because you don't want to give people more information than you need to. Under these circumstances, do you think they're going to be more or less forthright about what happens with CP3?
Well, the fact that Gambo was the first nationally to report, our own John Gambadora from Burns and Gambo, that he did test positive, then he got that from somewhere, so that you could say, hey, they're giving out a little bit of information. But at the same time, I don't think that there's any reason for them to let a lot of people know, because why do you want the Jazz or Clippers to know when he's going to be able to play, unless he does, again, unless he's asymptomatic, has back-to-back negative tests, and he's ready to go game one? Well, then you're going to let everybody know that. But if he misses any one game, I don't think you're going to know until shortly before the game that he's back for the next one.
Do we know when this positive test happened?
We don't, but we can be pretty confident that it was within the last 48 hours and not today. That it wouldn't have come out. He wouldn't have been tested, and because the news was out that he's in the health and safety protocols at 5:50 this morning. There's no way he tested positive, and that news got out by 5:50 all in one day. So it had to be yesterday or the day before.
So obviously the first concern is if you've got a player that's testing positive, everybody else on that team is at risk. We have not heard about anybody else being put in the protocol. How long does that danger exist until two negative tests in 24 hours?
As far as that, now you're getting into the actual epidemiology stuff.
Sure.
And I don't think anybody knows how long somebody has the virus when you've been vaccinated. Chris Paul has been vaccinated. So this is just hopefully waiting for the antibodies in his system to be able to fight off the virus and he's back. But if there were other people that would have tested positive, they would be in the health and safety protocols, and there's been no report that that's happened.
Well, one of the things that because we played some of the audio of your show when you talked to Gambo, and he was talking about the Phoenix Suns had the highest rate of cooperation with COVID-19 vaccination of the teams in the NBA, but that doesn't mean 100% of the team has. Are they worried that other players may have gotten it, and when will we know that they're in the clear?
I can't speak for them. They have not told me that they're worried about it, but I think naturally I would guess that anybody's worried that anybody in the workplace that has COVID, who else could get it? But again, in the NBA, you test every day. And if you're testing every day and only he has it, right now they should feel relieved. But we all know the way COVID works. It might show up later for other people.
the chances for the Suns against either one of these two teams with a full squad, everybody felt really good about their chances, including you. How do you feel about their chances without Chris Paul for any part or a significant part of the next series?
Tell me whether any part or significant part. If he misses a game, I feel good that the Suns will still go to the NBA Finals. If he misses three or more games, I feel very good the Suns are out of the playoffs after this round. If he just, but the little one in there is if he misses just the first two. Then I kind of wonder, well, where are the games at? You know, if he misses the first two games in Utah, I still feel pretty good. He's going to be back when you come home. However, if he misses the first two games against the Clippers, those would be in Phoenix. And losing two straight home games and then getting Chris Paul back, that would be an awful lot to try to win four games when three of them are in L.A.
Do you think they lose all four, like four straight? Do you think they get dominated without Chris Paul by either one of the other two teams?
By the Clippers, no. By the Jazz, it could happen. I'm still going to say no. Devin Booker is too good. Ayton's going to have one decent game, but it would probably be Jazz in five or six games.
Yeah, and it's so horrible. I've been admitting that I am a bandwagon fan of the Phoenix Suns. And so for me, it's just because I love watching this town go crazy. But what does this do to a fan base that has just been aching for this team to be back, for it to be this kind of a blow?
It all depends on how old the fan is, because if you are old enough, you'll go all the way back to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and losing the coin flip to draft Lou Alcindor. If you're younger, you'll add it to the Robert Horry shove and the suspensions of Amari and Boris. I mean, this franchise always has a long list of what-ifs, and this will get added to it. I'm still going to hope that he's asymptomatic. If he's asymptomatic, I think the Suns are in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, and that's, again, but the story itself is significant enough. But do you think there's enough maturity in this team? Because there's a lot of good but younger players. Is there enough maturity in this team now to be able to focus on what they need to focus on while this distraction
is
happening?
Yes, totally. They will not lose to the Clippers or Jazz because of a focus issue. They'll lose because Chris Paul is that good and losing him hurts that much.
It's a tough loss. I appreciate you jumping in every time we ask. I know it's overtime for you, but such a tough story. And we wanted to get a little bit of clarification because there's so little news out there. So we always appreciate the expertise.
Oh, no problem. It's not like the Suns have lost 22 straight road games.
All right. So now I have to ask that one question. You're a baseball guy.
I went to Cooperstown on my honeymoon, if you didn't know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. I don't know if it was good for my wife.
That's a great wife that went to Cooperstown for your anniversary or for your wedding trip, your honeymoon. How do you recover from losing 21 straight, being up 7-0 and blowing that lead? What do you do next?
You know, it's funny. I don't think you recover because you weren't good to begin with. I mean, this is not a good baseball team, and baseball is not something that you quickly turn around and fix. So the lucky thing is this team had a horrible farm system 3 and 4 years ago, and that's now how long it takes. So these are the players that should be coming up that are coming up from one of the worst farm systems ever. Well, luckily, that's been rectified. So as angry as you should be at Mike Hazen for thinking he had good major leaguers now, he's done everything he needs to do to fix the problem that's underneath the major league club. So I do think good things are on the horizon. The problem in baseball is the horizon is 2023.
Yeah. Well, it just was such a tough loss for them yesterday. I saw the score and thought they were finally going to break the streak, and I couldn't believe it when I saw the box score after
up 7-0, up 8-3, they lose.
Yep, they do. It's crazy. Well, thanks for the time, Doug. We appreciate it.
No problem.
That's Doug Franz. Coming up in just a moment, we're waiting for the President of the United States, not Vice President Harris, but President Biden to speak about his summit with Vladimir Putin. We're going to do that, and we're also going to talk about the Hacienda healthcare story. If you don't know it, we'll update you coming up here in just a couple of moments.
KTAR Breaking News Alert.
Jeff Munn in the KTAR News Center. President Biden begins his press conference following his meetings with Russian leader Vladimir Putin. We take you to Geneva, Switzerland live.
Well, I've just finished the last meeting of this week's long trip, the U.S.-Russian summit. And I know there were a lot of hype around this meeting, but it's pretty straightforward to me, the meeting. One, there's no substitute, as those of you who have covered me for a while know, for face-to-face dialogue between leaders. None. And President Putin and I had a share a unique responsibility to manage the relationship between two powerful and proud countries. A relationship that has to be stable and predictable. And it should be able to, we should be able to cooperate where it's in our mutual interest. And where we have differences, I want President Putin to understand why I say what I say and why I do what I do. And how we'll respond to specific kinds of actions that harm America's interest. Now, I told President Putin my agenda is not against Russia or anyone else. It's for the American people. Fighting COVID-19, rebuilding our economy, reestablishing relationships around the world, our allies and friends, and protecting the American people. That's my responsibility as president. I also told him that no president of the United States could keep faith with the American people if they did not speak out to defend our democratic values, to stand up for the universal and fundamental freedoms that all men and women have, in our view. That's just part of the DNA of our country. So human rights is going to always be on the table, I told him. It's not about just going after Russia when they violate human rights. It's about who we are. How could I be the president of the United States of America and not speak out against the violation of human rights? I told him that unlike other countries, including Russia, we're uniquely a product of an idea. You've heard me say this before again and again, but I'm going to keep saying it. What's that idea? We don't derive our rights from the government. We possess them because we're born, period. And we yield them to a government. And so the form I pointed out to him that that's why we're going to raise our concerns about cases like Alexei Navalny. I made it clear to President Putin that we'll continue to raise issues of fundamental human rights. Because that's what we are. That's who we are. The idea is we hold these truths self-evident. But all men and women, we haven't lived up to it completely, but we've always widened the arc of commitment and included more and more people. And I raised the case of two wrongfully imprisoned American citizens, Paul Whelan and Trevor Reed. I also raised the ability of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty to operate and the importance of a free press and freedom of speech. I made it clear that we will not tolerate attempts to violate our democratic sovereignty or destabilize our democratic elections, and we would respond. The bottom line is, I told President Putin that we need to have some basic rules of the road that we can all abide by. I also said there are areas where there's a mutual interest for us to cooperate, for our people, Russian and American people, but also for the benefit of the world and the security of the world. One of those areas is strategic stability. You asked me many times, what was I going to discuss with Putin before I came? I told you I only negotiate with the individual, and now I can tell you what I was intending to do all along. And that is to discuss and raise the issue of strategic stability and try to set up a mechanism whereby we dealt with it. We discussed in detail the next steps our country should take on arms control measures, the steps we need to take to reduce the risk of unintended conflict. And I'm pleased you agreed today to launch a bilateral strategic stability dialogue. Diplomatic speak for saying, get our military experts and our diplomats together to work on a mechanism that can lead to control of new and dangerous and sophisticated weapons that are coming on the scene now, that reduce the times of response, that raise the prospects of accidental war. And we went into some detail of what those weapon systems were. Another area we spent a great deal of time on was cyber and cybersecurity. I talked about the proposition that certain critical infrastructures should be off limits to attack, period, by cyber or any other means. I gave them a list, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have it in front of me, 16 specific entities, 16 defined as critical infrastructure under U.S. policy, from the energy sector to our water systems. Of course, the principle is one thing. It has to be backed up by practice. responsible countries need to take action against criminals who conduct ransomware activities on their territory. So we agreed to task experts in both our countries to work on specific understandings about what's off limits and to follow up on specific cases that originate in other countries, in their, either of our countries. There's a long list of other things we spent time on, from the urgent need to preserve and reopen the humanitarian corridors in Syria so that we can get food, just simple food and basic necessities, to people who are starving to death. How to build it and how it is in the interest of both Russia and the United States to ensure that Iran does not acquire nuclear weapons. We agreed to work together there because as much as Russia's interest is ours. And to how we can ensure the Arctic remains a region of cooperation rather than conflict. I caught part of President Putin's press conference, and he talked about the need for us to be able to have some kind of modus operandi where we dealt with making sure the Arctic was, in fact, a free zone. And to how we can each contribute to the shared effort of preventing the resurgence of terrorism in Afghanistan. It's very much in the interest of Russia not to have a resurgence of terrorism in Afghanistan. There are also areas that are more challenging. I communicated the United States' unwavering commitment to the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine. We agreed to pursue diplomacy related to the Minsk agreement. And I shared our concern about Belarus. He didn't disagree with what happened. He just has a different perspective of what to do about it. But I know you have a lot of questions, so let me close with this. It was important to meet in person so there can be no mistake about or misrepresentations about what I wanted to communicate. I did what I came to do. Number one, identify areas of practical work our two countries can do to advance our mutual interest and also benefit the world. Two, communicate directly, that the United States will respond to actions that impair our vital interest or those of our allies. And three, to clearly lay out our country's priorities and our values so we heard it straight from me. And I must tell you, the tone of the entire meetings, I guess it was a total of 4 hours, was good, positive. There wasn't any strident action taken. Well, we disagreed. I disagreed, stated where it was. Where he disagreed, he stated. But it was not done in a hyperbolic atmosphere. That is too much of what's been going on. Over this last week, I believe, I hope, the United States has shown the world that we are back, standing with our allies. We rallied our fellow democracies to make concerted commitments to take on the biggest challenges our world faces. And now we've established a clear basis on how we intend to deal with Russia and the U.S.-Russian relationship. There's much more work ahead. I'm not suggesting that any of this is done. We've gotten a lot of business done on this trip. And before I take your questions, I want to say one last thing. Folks, look, this is about how we move from here. I listened to, again, a significant portion of what President Putin's press conference was. And as he pointed out, this is about practical, straightforward, no-nonsense decisions that we have to make or not make. We'll find out within the next 6 months to a year whether or not we actually have a strategic dialogue.
All right, you've been listening to the press conference of President Biden as he talked about the summit between him and Vladimir Putin in Geneva.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with us. So coming up in just a few moments, it's probably about 15 minutes from right now, John Gambadoro is going to join us. Gambo from Burns and Gambo on our brother station is probably the sports insider in our community. He's the one that reported that Chris Paul tested positive. If anybody has inside information, it's going to be Gambo. And we all understand the Chris Paul story, I think, is the biggest story here in town of whether or not Chris Paul, or if and when Chris Paul, is going to be able to rejoin the team and play again. So Gambo's going to join us before we close this hour out. Let's talk about what we just heard. I want to set the stage. This is what President Biden said this summit was and was not about.
My agenda is not against Russia or anyone else. It's for the American people. Fighting COVID-19, rebuilding our economy, reestablishing relationships around the world, our allies and friends, and protecting the American people.
So, you know, this is, we've seen this act before, in my opinion, this reestablishing relationships as if the American relationships were ruined by the previous administration. This is exactly what we heard and what we called back then the apology tour from Barack Obama. He made his first trip outside of the U.S. as president of the United States. He went to the University of Cairo in Egypt and apologized for American arrogance was one of the things he apologized for. Now, there are a lot of people that agree with that. I'm just making the distinction that we've seen this before. The playbook that says the incoming president said, I had to make a trip across the world to reestablish relationships with other nations as if they were broken before this meeting happened. But that's where that set the stage. We're not anti-Russia. We are pro-America. And which is interesting that when you look at the previous administration, the saying America first was seen as a horrible thing to say. But I guess it's just delivered differently here. This was something interesting in the middle of all of this, and there wasn't much information given by the president, nor do I think there should have been, about this summit, because it was more of a, you understand that when leaders of these nations meet, it is a very broad brush meeting on topics, and then all the finer details of what might happen, positive or negative, afterwards are hashed out by people that work in each individual administration. So this was a meeting, and I don't want to say figureheads, because neither one of them are figureheads. They are leaders of their nations, but they are not going to be involved in the minutiae of what decisions will be made from this meeting. But he did talk about rights, and as Americans, we're born with rights. It was how he said this that I thought was a little bit different.
We don't derive our rights from the government. We possess them because we're born, period. And we yield them to a government.
Do you want to hear that again, Steve? Does that make any sense to you? I mean, is that all right? Listen, I understand I'm the Republican in the room. I'm going to be critical of Democrats. But does that not scare you a little bit?
I think he should have just left that last part off.
He should have left, without a doubt, left the last part off. I mean, listen to that again.
We don't derive our rights from the government. We possess them because we're born.
Right. Now, right there, if he stops there, we all understand that
totally
we are born with these rights. This is where he steps in it. Now I know. Oh, there it is.
Period. And we yield them to a government.
I love that he said period and then kept going.
Yes. So
his mistake was after period.
So let's break this down for just a moment. If anybody out there is wonders why Republicans are always so concerned about things, this is something that concerns me a great deal, because I know that that was not a mistake. I know that that is exactly what this president believes, that we are born. They admit we are born with rights. They are spelled out in the Bill of Rights. They're spelled out in our Constitution. We all believe, I think most of us understand, that the Constitution does not give the government or give people rights. It limits the power of the government. And as a matter of fact, it expressly says in the Constitution that any right not specifically given to the federal government in that document is then assumed to be the rights of the states. They made sure in that document that they were explaining that the federal government doesn't have all of this power. And if it's not expressly given to them there, the states have the power. But the caveat is, well, yeah, we have the right, but as a society, as a community, we give up those rights. It tells you a lot of the story about why they want to mandate vaccines and mandate masks and mandate things. It's like, sure, you have a right to not do that, But we're asking you to give up that right. I mean, that was just a weird thing to say in the middle of this press conference. And I don't know how many people picked up on it, but I did immediately when I heard it. Now, this was, is this a Freudian slip? I want to know if this was a Freudian slip.
I caught part of President Putin's press conference.
He almost called him Trump. That was a little funny.
I think he did call him Trump.
Well, he did.
He got like 60% of the way through the word Trump.
He did. This is our relationship with the Soviet Union went back in the 80s when it was called the Soviet Union. They were a superpower. And in all seriousness, I will say this. They were a superpower. And Vladimir Putin was with the KGB then, and the express desires of the Soviet Union was domination of America, of the United States, that they wanted to win. Whether it was going to be an actual war, it was called the Cold War because a shot wasn't fired, but there was definitely an arms race. We won the arms race, and our economy won the Cold War. Our economy dominated theirs. Theirs collapsed. They broke up, and that's what happened. But Vladimir Putin, in my opinion, has never forgotten that. Vladimir Putin was a proud member of the Soviet Union and fighting for the causes of the Soviet Union. There is the attitude of not necessarily revenge, although that could be used that way, that they still want the comeback of Russia, of the Soviet Union. They want to come back and dominate the world again. And I think that they would love to see the United States fall in a number of ways. The idea that what we saw was with these hacks that weren't coming from Russian agents as long when they deny things. We know that Russia is not necessarily ever again going to be an ally to the United States. Can they be someone that we can work with? That remains to be seen. But if any American trusts the word of Vladimir Putin that he just wants what's best for the American people, too, that I don't believe that that's the case. I think that with the president, our president, when he said that we are going to tell them where we think they're wrong and defend ourselves, and he told me where we thought we were wrong, but we can find areas of mutual agreement. I think that is a noble goal with a nation like Russia, because that's about the best you're ever going to get. I don't think we're ever going to get an ally in Russia. So this was a very serious summit, and we heard a little bit of the what happened because of it. In a moment, we're going to be joined by John Gambadoro. Gambo joins me from Burns and Gambo on Arizona Sports. He is the sports insider in town. He's got information on Chris Paul. We're going to talk to him about what he's found out and why. All that's coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. It is the Mike Broomhead Show. Appreciate you joining me. This morning, the news broke that Chris Paul of the Phoenix Suns was in the protocol. Later on this morning, it was verified by John Gambadoro from Arizona Sports from the Burns and Gambo show that he had tested positive for COVID-19. There is one sports insider above all others here in town, and it is Gambo from Arizona Sports. He joins us now. Gambo, you were the one that reported that he tested positive. Do we know about symptoms? Do we have any other details about the condition of Chris Paul?
Not on symptoms, Mike. We don't know the symptoms, but we were able to report that he did test positive, and we were the first to get that out there. Look, I do know the Suns had the highest level of participation in the vaccine in the league. That's coaches, players, and staff. They had the highest participation in the league. I do know the players continue to get tested on a daily basis. There was a thought that maybe because he went up into the stands that – you know, he was around some people after they clinched the series against Denver, that maybe there was, you know, tracing, or that he was around somebody that was positive. But you would not be in quarantine. Vaccinated players who come in contact with somebody that's positive do not go in quarantine. So once I found out he was in quarantine, I was able to just you know, find out that he did test positive, because you're not in quarantine unless you test positive for the virus.
So with that, along with that, is there any timeline that you know of, best case, worst case scenario, of when he could return or when, how long it could be?
It's going to, and this is the question everybody's asking, and it's, the truth of it, Mike, is that nobody knows. It all depends on when he clears protocol. He's going to have to pass at least two tests again. Now, they're tested daily. So the second he passes, now he can't be around the team at all. He can't participate in any practices or any meetings, so he's in quarantine. He's away from the team. Once he passes and clears, and I believe that's two tests that he has to pass, well, then he can return to the team. The timeline on that is we just don't know. I mean, you know, this. I mean, it's just, some people may take a week. Some people may take 3 days. We just have no clue of whether he's going to be available for game one or not, or when he could return. It's all dependent on when he clears these protocols and these tests.
The Phoenix Suns have been pretty tight-lipped throughout the COVID protocols with any player that enters the protocol. Do you imagine that they would give us more information about Chris Paul, or because it's Chris Paul with playoff implications, that they're just not going to say much?
No, they're not allowed to say anything, right? I mean, HIPAA laws, and, you know, you have to protect the players, you know, his health status. It's up to him. So, we have James Jones on our show today, I think 3 o'clock. So we'll have James Jones on, and we'll talk to the GM. But I'm sure that there's not much that he could say outside of confirming that he's in health and safety protocols, and we'll take it from that. They can't confirm that. You know, my report that he's had a positive test, and they can't say when he's going to be back because they just don't know.
Without Chris Paul, but the time to prepare that they have to prepare without him, what chances do you give the Phoenix Suns against either one of the two teams that are left?
You know, the Clippers might be done with Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard might be out for the rest of the playoffs. I mean, he's got a knee injury. He's not playing tonight for the Clippers against the Jazz in Utah, and that's a big blow to them. He's one of the best players in the league. That really hurts the Clippers. So I like the Suns' chances of getting by this next round. I think the Clippers would have been a tougher opponent if they were healthy. But if Kawhi Leonard's knee is bad, that's going to be very difficult for the Clippers. The Suns are going to be well-rested going into this next round with these other teams, whether it's the Jazz or the Clippers or not. It's just, man, this is a gut punch, Mike. I mean, you're dealing with, you know, your star player, and now he's in health and safety protocol, and we don't know if it's 7 days or 10 days, or if we just have no clue as to when he can return.
You've been around Arizona sports for a very, very long time, and it seems like the Phoenix Suns in the playoffs have a dark cloud with the craziest things that happen to them when they look like they're rolling. Phoenix Suns fans have just got to feel like, not again, right?
I mean, I think so. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, everything was going right. They've been probably the healthiest team. There's been 9 all-star players this year that have missed playoff games. That's the most ever. 9 players that have been all-star. James Harden, Anthony Davis, Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, Jaylen Brown, Joel Embiid, Kyrie Irving, and now maybe Chris Paul. Now, he'd be the 9th player that's an all-star to miss a playoff game this year. That's the most in a season in NBA history.
Well, Gambo, I appreciate the time. I know you were always pulled in a bunch of different directions, but I know today's been a crazy day for you. So thanks for coming on with my audience, and we look forward to hopefully good news in the coming days.
You got it, Mike. You know, in 2 weeks, I'm leaving for Italy in 2 weeks, and I'm on a COVID-tested flight. It's the only way I could get there and not quarantine, was to go to New York, go to JFK, get on a COVID-tested flight, take a test here, take a test in New York, and take a test in Milan. I'm vaccinated, but that's still, for me to get there, I've got to take 3 different tests and be on a special flight.
I am very jealous. Tell us about you going to Italy. It's my favorite place to visit in the world, so I can't wait to hear about that trip when you're back.
You got it. Take care, buddy.
All right, thanks, Gambo. That is Gambo from Burns and Gambo. He's on this afternoon, and he really is the guy that is the insider in sports here in town. And I got to say, I am a little bit jealous that he's going to Italy. That I didn't want to hear that. I didn't need to hear that at all. But Chris Paul out indefinitely, and nobody has news yet. As it comes in, we'll get it. This is one of the biggest stories in town. The fact of the matter is that he's been vaccinated is very good news for his health, because although the vaccine is over 90% effective, and he is part of that 10% now that's contracted, even though he's been vaccinated, they say it's 100% effective in preventing serious illness. So that at least is really good news for the health of Chris Paul moving forward. Whether or not he can rejoin the team remains to be seen. Just after 11 o'clock, we're going to talk about the Latino vote. Is it completely up for grabs? There's one story that says yes. We're going to talk with an analyst, the senior analyst from Latino Decisions. His name is Steven Nuno. We're going to talk with him in a couple of moments about that. Is the Latino vote in Arizona up for grabs? Next.